So I thought I'd start off just talking a bit about Manjushri and the beast. The image that we had on the altar is the main altar statue, I think, from the meditation hall at Sojiji, the monastery that Master Jiu trained in Japan. And a throstle too in the monk's meditation hall, we have a statue of Manjushri there. And the usual form of Manjushri is as a bodhisattva seated on the beast of self that never sleeps. And I think that's quite a helpful image for thinking about wisdom and for thinking about us and our experience of life and the world. It can seem like there's a bodhisattva aspect to us, that we want to do good, we want to live well, we want to live from wisdom, we want to live as Buddha. And there's a real true intention there. And of course that's what brings us to practice, that's what brings us to meditation. At the same time, we notice and we realise that there are ways that we behave that aren't quite in tune with this aspiration that we have. That we, however much we want to live in ways that are good and benefit people, we also sometimes get angry or anxious or fearful, worried, all sorts of things. All of these drives can arise, and they can feel like we're at the mercy of this beast of self that we can't quite control and we don't quite understand, that we're riding on. But sometimes we think we want to go in a particular way, the way that's beneficial, and yet we find this beast carrying us off in all sorts of opposite directions, all sorts of blind alleys that we know really we don't really want to go down, but nevertheless we find ourselves driven by what, and we don't understand quite what, and that's why it seems like a beast of self that's trying to always lead us in unhelpful directions. There's something there, drives, instincts, unknown, unexplored, not understood aspects of us that, despite our best intentions, drive us into acting in ways that actually do create harm. And we see that is going on. And of course, that's also part of what brings us to practice, that we acknowledge there's an issue there and that we want to do something about it. I think it's interesting that the beast is described as the beast of self. And I think it's worth just thinking about, what does that actually mean? What is the beast of self? Especially bearing in mind the Buddha's teaching of no self. There is no self. If there is no self, what's this beast of self that Manjushri is riding on? Mm. The Buddha's teaching of no self is emphasizing that there is no permanent abiding being that goes from one lifetime to another. There's no kind of core thing inside us that is independent of body and mind, and somehow has its own independent eternal existence. That isn't true. But the Buddha doesn't deny that it feels like that's true. We have a sense of self. We have a sense of our own being and our own existence, of us being not exactly the centre of our world, but that's where we perceive everything from here, from this sense of the being, a me that interacts with the world, that decides to do things, that sees, hears and smells. But the teaching of no self points out that although it seems like there is an abiding being here, that's actually just a pattern, an image, a temporary abiding. There is, yes, we do have that sense of a personality, of a self, of a me, but it doesn't actually mean that it's a permanent, solid thing in quite the way that we think it is. Nevertheless, there is that sense of ourselves that we have, and there are aspects to that we don't quite understand, and these are the aspects that are being portrayed as the beast, really. Aspects that aren't very helpful, that we, through meditation, come to gradually explore. And the wisdom of Manjushri is the wisdom of exploring those things. When we hear the word wisdom, it can seem like something very distant or otherworldly or not understood that we aspire to. But the wisdom that the Buddha talks about is very practical and very straightforward. It's the wisdom to come to understand the ways in which we cause harm and to refrain from them. That's the wisdom that Manjushri points to. And in the picture downstairs of the Bodhisattva riding on the beast, the Bodhisattva is sitting in a very composed way. It's like sitting as the Buddha statue does on the altar, sitting in meditation. And that's our way of coming to understand what the true nature of the beast is. It can seem like it's something terrible and unruly that's driving us all the time. But when we're willing to sit down and just be, just sit in meditation and allow the thoughts to be there, allow the feelings, the emotions to be there, that gives us an opportunity to come to understand them rather than just being driven by them all the time. We can allow anger to arise and feel what it's like to be angry without acting on it. And when we do that, we get an insight into the nature of anger, that yes, there is something arising, but actually I see I don't have to act on it. And similarly, if it's fear arising, if it's anxiety, if it's worry, if it's desire, whatever it might be, the Bodhisattva sitting still is us simply being willing to allow that to be here, to explore it, to come to understand it. And part of that understanding is seeing more and more clearly that when I do act on that, not only does it cause harm for others, it causes suffering for me. It makes me feel isolated, separate from the rest of existence. And as we come to see that more clearly, it's very clear that if we want to find the end of suffering, then there is no other way other than to refrain from acting on those drives. And that's coming to understand the beast, coming to see that what we think is a terribly unruly thing that just forces us to do things that we don't understand and don't want to do. Actually, if we're willing just to sit still, we can see those tendencies, allow them to be there, but actually not be driven by them. And that's the wisdom that Manjushri offers, the wisdom that meditation offers. To see that there are those drives, but to see that even though they're there, we're not compelled to follow them. But we can't just decide, oh, I'm not going to be driven by that. We have to do the hard work of actually being willing just to sit with it and come to understand it. And that can take quite a while for us to make the connection between the ways that I behave and the suffering that I feel. We start off when we sit in meditation, it's like we're a black box. We don't know what goes on in there. We see some of the inputs. We see we do act in ways that are spiteful or based on our own self-interest. And we also realise there's a sense of suffering here, a sense of disconnect, a sense of not really knowing our place in the world. But it's only by being willing to sit within that unknown nature of things that we gradually come to see how these things are connected, the ways that I act and the way that I feel. There is actually a connection there. And the gradual unfolding of that, the gradual unpacking and exploring of that, is what leads us to the wisdom that Manjushri is portraying. That we find that the statue, that to begin with seems quite impossible that we would be able to just sit still in meditation with this beast raging, we come to see that actually it is possible, because the nature of the beast isn't quite what we thought it was. It isn't this wild, ferocious thing that which is intent on destruction. It's simply our ignorance of the true nature of things. And as we see that a bit more clearly, the beast doesn't seem to have quite so sharp teeth as it did before. Its claws aren't quite so big. We understand it. when it's in the shadows of our mind and we can't quite see it, we imagine all sorts of things. But when we allow it to step forward into the light and be understood, we see that the wisdom that Manjushri points to is the wisdom of sitting still within those fears and desires arising. And the sitting still allows us the opportunity to refrain from being driven by them. And it's that refraining which is the crucial thing. Understanding, in theory, how it all works is good, but what it comes down to is how we live. And that's the real refraining. And that's the practice of Manjushri, sitting still upon the beast. When we're able to see a little bit more clearly how that goes on, when we're able to actually refrain from causing harm, we find that makes it much easier for us actually to sit still, because we're not causing so much disturbance for ourselves internally. And as we're able to sit more still within those feelings and thoughts arising, we can see that the beast actually isn't a thing intent on harm at all. It's just the nature of us as a human being, the personality that we have, the character that we have, the perceptions that we have, even the drives that we have. They're all part of a human being, and they're all part of how a human being can interact with the world. Without those things, we wouldn't be the people that we are, the beings that we are. So, for example, we see that in some situations where we react with fear or with anger, they're simply mechanisms that the body has to protect itself. And when we realise that's what they are, we don't have to be so scared of them. We don't have to be so driven by them. The picture I had on the altar of the Sojiji altar, that statue of Manjushri is shown seated in meditation. But it's also quite common for statues of Manjushri to be holding the sword of wisdom in one hand, and that's what was talked about in the invocation that we sang, holding the sword of wisdom. And the sword always, I think, in Buddhism represents wisdom. It's the wisdom of cutting through attachments. It's that sharp sword that cuts through attachments. And that, I think, is a very helpful image, but one we also have to be a bit careful with, because if I think that I can wield the sword to cut off things I don't like, then I have to be a bit careful with that, because rather than that being acceptance and understanding, that can very easily just be suppression and denial, that I see there's a part of myself, I see this anger or I see this fear, whatever it might be, and I want to see how I can get hold of that sword to just cut it off and sever it, be rid of it. And that isn't at all how the sword of wisdom functions. The sword of wisdom is really pointing to exactly what I've been talking about, that we're willing to sit still with those aspects of us that are difficult. We're willing to see how they drive us. We're willing to see that there is a connection between the way I act and the suffering that I feel, and that we're willing to refrain. And when we're willing to refrain and we actually put that into practice, that right there and then is the functioning of the sword of wisdom. There is the cutting off of attachment, but not through us trying to skip to the end step. We want this to be gone, so we just try and cut it off. That's just ignoring what's actually here. The functioning of the sword of wisdom is to be willing to sit with an open heart, with open hands, to be willing to accept that aspect of us, and also to see how acting on it causes us suffering. And it's not as glamorous as we sometimes hope it might be, to pick up this sword of wisdom and wield it and cut off things. It's a much slower, much more painstaking, in the sense of willing to sit for as long as it takes to see clearly, And it's the seeing clearly, it's the clarity about the connection between our actions and the way that we feel that is the functioning of the sword of wisdom. But always we have to be careful not to be trying to wield it, because that's just the beast actually again. It's our drives to try and be rid of something that we don't like, rather than being willing to really come to understand it and know it.